Hi, the name's New Bronner, Dion New Bronner. You're listening to my podcast, Life, Purpose, Leadership, where I chew the fat with guests from many walks of life. Yep, I ponder the big questions, and we play around with some less significant ones too. I sometimes unpick the practice of leadership, delving into what it means to many. We laugh and we explore what it is to live with purpose and meaning. I hope you find the chat as useful as I have having it. Life, purpose, leadership. Today, my guest is Martin Hurworth, entrepreneur and CEO, a scale-up leader, a pathfinder, motivator, engineer. He helps SME businesses get from where they are now to where they could be. He helps them scale up and succeed. He works with companies that have huge potential. Typically, they are not performing and have long-term planning issues. He focuses on helping the owners gain experience on how to scale up their business to its full potential. He claims he's not an academic consultant. He is a time-served business leader, an engineer by trade, where he brings his experience growing multi-million pound businesses to deliver success for business owners who are market leaders themselves and open to change and keen to scale up. He is a father of two and a husband and a keen sportsman, including weightlifting, something we touch on in our conversation today, which surprised me.
Before Christmas, I woke up one morning and thought to myself, I don't know, I think I need to get some weights for the house. Nothing had happened. We were all fine. Everybody was hunky-dory. So I started ordering, and I ordered shed load. And I'm glad I did, because I've got 160 kilograms of weight. So
yeah,
and a bench pressy thing.
You're doing flat, you're doing chest.
I do chest, and then I do chest, back, arms, and then occasionally legs.
You're literally doing legs. Legs are fun. See, that's the difference. That's why you're looking chunkier on top, because I'm having to do legs as well. So I, you know, front squats and deadlifts, which are the killer.
When I'm in my swimming trunks, hopefully this summer, people will laugh at my skinny little legs. But then I've always had skinny legs.
What about squats? What's your favorite squats? What's the problem? Tell me about squats.
This is going to be the subject of our podcast. This is going to be hilarious. This is about life, purpose, leadership.
It's about being the best version of yourself. Yeah. Then talk about your legs.
Legs. What about it? In squats.
Yeah. So front squat, back squat, what you know, deadlift. Why is it not working for you?
It's terribly superficial, my response, but it's because one can't see the aesthetics as readily as one can when one's doing chest and back and arms.
And how have you tested that?
But that actually is not too entirely true, because when I was working with the lovely Ben, we would not skip legs. I worked with him for 18 months, and in the 18 months, there were signs of leg development. so it's not necessarily about the aesthetic. I think I'm just one of those people that likes an easy life, right?
I think legs, it doesn't take very long for a few sessions for you to start. So it depends if you're looking for the aesthetics or the burn, because the burn comes first. So the pain after a heavy legs day is quite rewarding. The inability to walk.
And there's probably more cardio. Yeah. There's probably more calorie burn in a legs exercise than in any other.
There is, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm, you know, for me, legs is a means to keep slim, I would say.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
They're big muscles, and also you can load them up really quite hard. So I enjoy the feeling afterwards, the next day when your ass is really hurting. And then I know that I've worked well. In terms of what motivates, in terms of, you know, what motivates leg day, for instance, is filming it, videoing it, and seeing what it looks like and how deep I go. But this, pulling it back to a theme, I think you're running the risk here of not training the whole of you.
Yes.
You know, and this is a, you know, a whole person conversation, all that kind of stuff. Focusing on what looks good.
Yeah.
Rather than some of the foundations that are, that would be much more balanced. And actually, like I say, you know, the legs, well, back's good because you've got a lot of big muscle in your back. But, you know, your legs and your back is where you burn a lot of energy. So big legs will, you know, keep you fit.
And you're right about it, because if one just goes, for example, for just high reps, heavy weight and not high reps, you're building muscle, but you're not necessarily developing the strength as much. So this, and the strength will lead to the capability of doing heavier weight. Yes, and it becomes a sort of superficial appearance thing.
Which I think is what I'm seeing. I mean, yeah. It's a great appearance, but it's a bit superficial. You've got to put the hard work in.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll do a leg session then tomorrow.
Okay, so there's sort of legs. So you need a couple of leg sessions and also a deadlift as well. So I'm doing two.
I'll do that as part of my leg session.
So I just, yeah. So I do two different days front squats, and then I also do a deadlift session as well.
Right. So,
yeah. Because they, you know, the legs are doing one thing and the deadlift is doing something else. And the deadlift is, yeah, they're all good, all round body. But the advantage with front squats, squats and deadlifts, is it also does your stomach as well.
There's a chap on Facebook that I've seen. I think his name is James, and he's like an exercise guru. He's quite hot too. He's been on This Morning. And he talks with profanity about exercise and people, and he takes the piss out of people. And everybody, loads of people comment on it going, oh, your videos would be so much better if there was less profanity. And the guy just responds with, fuck off. Is that what we're talking about? Authenticity.
I think so. I think I've never thought of it in that way, but focusing on not the whole body in fitness actually is an interesting way into authenticity, isn't it?
Well, yeah. When before lockdown, when you're at the gym, and I was going to the gym four times a week, and every time I'm going, I'm doing a different exercise. But there are people there that one dude once was training with his shirt off, and the place is covered in mirrors. So I think I find it hard to believe, and this is probably my problem, I find it hard to believe that exercise or gym exercise isn't anything other than wanting to look good. So therefore not heart-centered, therefore quite ego-driven. But to your point, I suppose, yes, if one approaches exercise not in that way, in a more whole body, whole person way, then I guess you're more inclined, one, to do better exercises that suit your body and suit your lifestyle, and two, exercises that also eventually over time make you look of certain decency.
And I think the risk that you can have is, you know, the gym thing is focusing on the body, and there's a massive gap that people are doing, that they're not focusing on mind. It's all very well having the best appearance body, not necessarily the most fittest body, which it can be in terms of healthiness. But there's no point if you're not also putting the effort into mindset, thought, thinking, things as well. It comes back to you only like focusing on your chest and your arms. You're missing out of, you know, you're only doing a piece of the pie. And I always, when I was my PT down in Aldershot, in Woking, I said to him, I said, there's a gap here for not mindfulness, but a kind of coaching approach, a mental coaching approach that sits alongside physical training. But if there's that's a place for that, because you can have the sharpest body, but if your thinking is not clear, you're not going to be you're not going to reach your potential. Yeah, whatever that potential is, and that can be having a good life.
And most fitness, instruction is primarily about yes, eating well and diet, and then the physical exercise. There's less emphasis on the mind element of it, which is indicative of our society.
Because, you know, do they people maintain that form over time? Mm. Or because there was some celebrity, I don't know, being on one of those shows that you take your top off and I think you meet girls. And he'd completely changed afterwards. He couldn't stay at that level of appearance. In fact, was quite large. And that to me doesn't feel the right way about doing it either. It's not, you know, you've got to really own it yourself for yourself. Else you're looking for external validation in there as well, aren't you? So you've got to find a way that works for you.
Because I think most of the time, the reason why people do that is there's a gap inside. One, there isn't an awareness that there's a gap inside, and two, they believe that which they're aspiring to is the Holy Grail, creates meaning in life and is purposeful. And three, if they do realize that there's a gap in them, they try and fill that gap with that kind of stuff. We all do it to an extent. We seek that external validation. It's the same as social media likes and things like that. I mean, recently I've set up a Facebook group called Meaningful Life, and it's just about discussion. And I really do want to just have discussions about what constitutes a meaningful life. What is fulfillment? How do we find it? Where is it? What is this? If I have a purpose and I'm clear about it, how does that translate into a meaningful life? And we had a very interesting discussion this recently about we are not the sum of our emotions and thinking, with some people unable to comprehend the philosophy that I am not the sum of my thoughts and feelings, that capability to be able to separate out who you are from your mind and your feelings.
I think it's the majority. I think it is a very easy place to stay. It's limiting, but it's hard at times to separate those thoughts. I think I think we do run on automatic a lot of the time, so it is hard to put the brake in. So for instance, I mean, I was looking at something the other day where there's some doubt creeping in. I'd been prompted about this from a book I'd read, and it was, well, who's saying that? That's what, you know, in my head, I had to play out. Well, who's saying that? Just to kind of force that separation, you know, that I'm not that whole way of thinking. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, you're not.
Put that question in and see what comes out. Going back to the meaningful life thing, I was looking at something the other day, and it was not meaningful life, it was different, slightly different language, which was a rich life. Not about being rich, but how to have a rich life. For me, I think that resonates more than a meaningful life. There's a richness in different things that you do, and there's a bit of depth. When I think of richness, I think of depth more than I think of meaningful. Mm. The phrase "a rich life" resonated quite nicely.
For me, a meaningful life is a good life, a life well spent. That's what my view on it is, and that well spentness, I think, is defined by a number of things, not least of all, a sense of belonging. So really good relationships, connecting with people, really understanding the value of really good relationships and how relationships can make me feel like or be like I want to, how I choose to. And I think purpose is another one, having a sense of purpose and knowing what that is and living it as often as possible, or living through it as often as possible. And I think the other is storytelling, and being able to share stories with those meaningful relationships, whether it be at home, at work, or wherever. And the fourth one, which I think a lot of people go, ooh, what's that all about? That's a bit sort of religious, spiritual, is transcendence. Being able to reach a slightly higher plane of existence, even if it is only for a moment. That's why I think a meaningful life isn't about some nebulous kind of altruistic thing. It's very much about practical things. And for me, that's those four practical things: belonging, purpose, storytelling, and transcendence, which brings about or facilitates a more meaningful life. And coming back to this pumping iron stuff we were talking about, the point that you make about if one approaches whole person way, i.e. in a healthy way, both mind, physical, and diet, and all of that, then one's living a more good life for that rather than the opposite.
Do you think meaningful life, with all the challenges of COVID and the insecurity that that has for a lot of people, do you think a meaningful life works for people when they have that level of underlying concern? Do you need to be in a certain place to have a meaningful, to be able to think about that clearly? And I'm thinking almost like Maslow's theory, when you're focusing on food, you can't be at the top of the,
I don't see a meaningful life as a self-actualization piece. I don't see it as the top of Maslow's, because you can find meaning in daily things that you do, or you can find meaning in searching for the right job, or getting, or being able to move yourself from one situation where you've lost your job to trying to find something else for yourself, to search for something that really has value for you or is important to you. And if what is important to you is to bring bread or food onto the table, and you do it in a way that is really you, and it is genuinely part of your journey of who you want to be, and I think there is a thing about who we want to be, not who I am, then I think a meaningful life is important. I think meaningful life is genuinely about ensuring that the things that I do day to day serve me, the people around me, and the people I come into contact with, or the people I impact. And if that serving me is to put bread on the table, then that the truth lies in, isn't that good enough? And I think because we look at that situation, if I'm in that situation, and say things like to ourselves, like, I'm clearly not good enough, I've lost my job, or I'm not going to get another job, or I can't do this. Oh my God, I see all these people on social media and they're like so rich, and look at me. Because we fill our lives with comparison and judgment and analysis. And I think a meaningful life is removing the comparisons, the judgment, and accepting who I want to be, accepting my situation, and in the right time, doing something about my situation personally, which leads me to a point around individual responsibility too. But that's another argument.
You know, when like last year, when you were concerned about the impact of COVID on your business, were you able to maintain that approach, or did the concerns of bread on the table get in the way of that?
I don't believe I am, or anybody who lives on this planet, is perfect. And I don't believe we all can live a life that is completely and utterly always in the present. What I'm trying to say is I fall back into what Eckhart Tolle calls pain body experience. So I fall back into a way of thinking or being that is unhelpful, that is perhaps negative, that is perhaps isn't useful for me, isn't kind to me, because I'm a human being and I have stuff from the past that I'm listening to your point of your doubt. You listen to a voice in your head, and you had to ask yourself a question to help yourself let go of that doubt or remove yourself from the doubt and totally be. So in answer to your question, I went through periods last year where I was riddled with anxiety. Why was I riddled with anxiety? I think I was riddled with anxiety because a number of things. One, I wasn't living in the present. I was constantly thinking about what the future could be. And I presented that future to myself as being negative, and that I was going to lose the business, I was going to not have enough money, and I wasn't going to be able to send William to the school that I wanted to send him to, etc. So I was living in the future, and I was driven by my past experiences of where my parents weren't able to put food on the table. So there was the anxiety about what could be, and a regret of what had come before. But the whole way through that period, I don't believe I ever lost sight of my purpose. I think my purpose has always anchored me in a sense of resilience.
Is that you looking backwards at where you are now and sort of post-rationalizing the time? Because for a lot of people, that's not going to be the story that plays out.
No, I would say even at the time, there were moments where I knew the answers. And I knew that things would be okay because at the time I could see in myself that I was constantly looking to the future. Even if it was just the next day, oh my goodness, what am I going to get a client tomorrow? Or is this one going to sign up in the next week or so? I noticed that that is how I was fueling my anxiety. Yeah, and I think when we focus on living a more, let's call it a good life, a life filled with the right relationships, a sense of purpose, where we connect with others through sharing and engage and talking, and we cultivate moments of being in the now, we are able to live the life that we choose to live. And I think that is part of, I think that can happen even when you are lost a job and you don't know where the next bit of money is coming from. I'm finding it interesting that you are asking me the questions rather than me asking you. This is supposed to be the other way around.
It's a conversation, isn't it? And I'm fascinated by your views on this. I mean, I guess part of this meaningful life or the rich life, I'm thinking is, you know, is and again, it's the gym, it's the fitness kind of analogy.
Yeah.
It's putting in the other work. So for instance, if you do lose your job, you've done other stuff. You've kind of prepared yourself. You're not your job. Yeah.
That's my point about the individual responsibility piece.
Yeah. So, you know, and I've said this many times and even myself got affected by this, you know, conversations about redundancy, about redundancy. And I'm really quite focused on this, that everybody should be prepared for being made redundant, because as you know, running a business, you're not in control of everything, and it's not personal. It's just the business, that part of the business could close down, the market could collapse, all kinds of stuff. So what is your preparedness for when that happens? And I was a classic, because obviously when I was made redundant, I felt I was the I was very much the job. Mm. So what I advise other people, ultimately I ended up, it ended up happening to me. And then I was the job, which was quite a difficult change for me. Mm. So perhaps in this, this sort of wholesomeness is to make sure that you are ready for these other things. But I do like the Eckhart Tolle pain body. I've forgotten about that.
Mm.
Because that pain body, his view on there is all your historical. Mm. It's kind of what's in your background. It's what's in your family. It's the stories that have been played out that then manifest themselves as, you know, doubt, imposter syndrome. And those are the voices that you need to pick apart and say, well, is there, you know, and it is hard for people to get their heads around this, but it is questioning yourself and going, well, Who's saying that? Where's that coming from? Oh, that was my father's life, was it? Mm. But how is that the same as mine? It's not.
Yeah,
you know.
It's being a critical thinker, able to to listen and observe. I wrote a blog called Pause, Breathe and Observe. And I think it's really relevant here. It's not actually about finding moments to pause. It is just pausing. And pausing can be an absolute millisecond, or it could be a whole day taking a break from, or it could be a whole holiday, but it could also be a millisecond where you actually literally breathe and you take space and time to be. And being isn't about thinking. Being isn't about experiencing emotion. Being is about letting that thinking go.
For me, it's about being curious as to where, you know, what that thinking is, where's it coming from, and how would you counter it? You know, as an engineer, it's like a gap analysis. So having some curiosity around, well, what's that thought? What's all that about? Well, okay, that's interesting. But where do I want to go with that? And then how do I get there? And if you can catch yourself doing that, or get into the habit of doing that, that's really, really useful.
That's still thinking about the future.
If that's what you're trying to do at that point. Yeah. Mm. So for instance, we cannot, if you're running a business, we're unable to do this, or that's not possible. We haven't got any money, or this, that, and the other. It's, you know, is to challenge that, because some of that is just wrong, you know, and it's just driven by emotion and fear.
Very much so about the latter, fear. Yeah. But I've taken myself to have this kind of approach. I think I can articulate it. I'm not sure if I will be able to. But this kind of approach to this year, and hopefully beyond this year, and it ties into a particular word for me. And the approach is, I'm going to see if I can. I can't articulate it. I can't really. The word is acceptance. So whatever happens, this is not to say that I'm going to, because I think there's a distinction between acceptance and resignation. I'm not going to resign myself to doing nothing. So let's just put that to one side. But with acceptance, I'm going to just accept how things unfold. And I want to observe and notice. If I do that, what happens? What happens in the moment of doing it? What happens in the weeks and months? What happens in the next 12 months? What happens in the next however many years? And I'm going to try and take that approach, which is, for me, the opposite of thinking, what next? What can I do next? How can I be next? So, for example, I've really wanted to launch my residentials this year. And I've let go of the thinking for doing that. I've stopped going over how I go about planning that. Just accepted of how this year's going to pan out, however it does, and how whatever I do. And I'm going to want to see from an observer perspective, that critical thinker, I want to step back and be able to see. I just want to see how I am as a result. Which is completely the opposite to approaching business or approaching life with a critical thinking, looking at what next, and assessing what's happened thus far, which is a very business mindset, which is a very life mindset. It's about looking at what's worked so far, what hasn't worked so far, what do we need to do to get there? How do we need to get there? I know where there is, but tomorrow or the next day, there might be slightly different.
It this is law of attraction, is it?
I don't like those sort of things.
No, I don't either, but I'm not talking, because I don't really understand the thing. But it's what I say is, and what I mean is, you know, years ago at school, being attracted to a girl, if you asked, you know, when you're young, asked and pestered, you got nowhere. If you were cool and didn't try, that was the more successful approach. It's a little bit like sales nowadays. You can knock on doors to try and generate sales and get nowhere, or you can put content out, you can do stuff, you can be. So, and I don't, I'm trying to not make it too commercial, but you kind of, you know, the purpose and the opportunities that are out there kind of coexist. You know,
possibly. However, we do things in a particular way all the time. And for me, it's trying to make things happen. And sometimes I'm saying, perhaps there's room for just letting it happen. I don't understand why letting it happen, and I'm using that as a collective term for all of what I've been discussing, letting it happen is seen as apathy or doing nothing.
I think it's different for different situations. I think it's in some respects, it's not fair for you to say you're just letting it happen because you have a flywheel, you have momentum already that you're letting it kind of go in a direction. So it's not the sat on the sofa, I'm doing nothing. You have built some momentum up and now you're seeing it's a child, yeah? And you're letting it go and you're seeing what comes back. Mm. But there is a story there. There is a Dion world that's already been created that you're just letting see where it takes you.
I come back to, in my head, a tennis analogy and that book, In a Game of Tennis.
Yeah.
And this is my interpretation of the section that relates to what we're talking about. When you're coaching a child or a teenager with tennis, the best way to do it is let the person, the child or the teenager, whatever, just hit the ball. Most coaching, in my experience that I've either gone through or seen, is the coach tells the coachee what to do. Compare that last sentence to the coaching you've experienced or the coaching that you deliver in business or the coaching that I deliver in business. I never tell my clients what. But in that in a game of tennis, the chap talks about getting the child or the teenager to hit the ball again and again and again, and then ask the child, what did he or she notice about what they did? In particular, what did they notice about the ball? What did they notice about their arm? What did they notice about the racket? What did they notice about where they started with the racket? What did they notice about where they finished with the racket? What did they notice what their feet were doing? Obviously, they didn't ask all those questions all at one time, but he asks those questions of the coachee at the time, over a period of time. And then he provides his observation, and together they then develop the skill that is the likes of Federer or Nadal. And actually, Federer talks about the fact that his coach took that approach with him when he was a child. And that, for me, is an example of not the coach or me or us not trying to make it happen. To your point about momentum, what happens is over a period of time, we've developed this momentum or capability.
Yeah.
And then we can let it go. Think about the training analogy, the pumping iron analogy. Yeah. It's building up your internal capability, your physical and your physical prowess to be able to lift more weights and eat healthily and blah, blah, blah.
For some reason, very good at deadlift, whereas my PT, you couldn't deadlift what I could deadlift. You do have a start point, or you do have a makeup that enables you to have certain thrusts. Going back to the tennis player, he knows how to hit the ball, but he just hasn't observed the process before.
The best technique. The
best technique, yeah.
Well, Martin Hurworth, this has been an interesting discussion.
It has.
Thank you so much for joining me on our discussion this afternoon.
Yes, it's been good fun.
So that's it. The name's Neubronner, Dion Neubronner. You're listening to my podcast, Life, Purpose, Leadership.